Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is the Blog Talk family. Well, I'm talking to the Blog Talk family. This is Leslie Gist. Are you on the line, Mr. Anthony? Anthony, did you just hang up? Okay, hold on, people. Please don't hang up again.
Okay.
This is technology, but you got to bear with me.
All righty.
All right. Mr. Anthony, tell the audience who you are and why do you think I invited you to be a guest on this show, the Antique E-Show.
My name is Barry Anthony, and I've been a collector of African-American history for the past 20 years. I met Leslie several months ago at a show I was doing, and she seemed to feel I had some interesting type artifacts of black history. My collection ranges from the Revolutionary War period to modern day times. I think I try to collect interesting documents that reflect all areas of African American history. Like I said, pre-Revolutionary War period, I collect Negro League, money, all types of items. So it's whatever moves me is what I get into.
How did you get involved with your collection?
Well, quite by accident, actually. I used to do antique shows, collecting artifacts, just regular American artifacts. And at an auction one time, I saw this advertising item featuring a black mechanical boy. And it was the first time I'd seen anything like that, and it just burned my curiosity. And I just started going around to different auctions and yard sales and flea markets and seeing what I can come up with. And to much of my surprise, there were a lot of things out there that I was totally unaware of that were being housed by different people.
And how old were you when you first got bit by this bug?
Oh, I guess I was in my 40s.
And before then, what was your outlook on antiques and things of that nature?
Well, mainly I collected wood products, dry sinks, cupboards, furniture, that type of thing. And not even thinking that there were probably slaves or master cabinet makers from slavery times. But as time went on, I discovered that there were these artifacts out there.
What was the first item that you collected that surprised you as far as its value?
Toys. I had a, early on, I was collecting mainly African-American toys made by German companies, such as Chan, Strauss and Company. Those companies were, some of them were in New Jersey, and they made these wind-up types of toys. And so I kind of made it my business to collect those as well as the mechanical banks. To answer your question, the first mechanical bank I had was a Black Dyna, which is a mechanical bank which you pull a lever and a coin that was deposited in her hand pops into her mouth. That I didn't know really how much that would be worth until much later. But my second bank was called the Darktown Battery by Stevens Company.
Well, how did you find out the value of your first bank?
Well, I bought a book, one of the first books. I'm trying to think of the author's name. It was a woman author, and I believe she was out of Carolina. And I would just kind of go through the book and see what was in there. And then I would try to find those types of items. So, of course, the book had a variety of collectibles, anywhere from advertising cards to postcards to toys to household items. So I just kept an eye out for those things. And everywhere I went, I just bought things that were in pretty good condition, because not everything was always in good condition. A big lesson I learned as I went through my collecting time is, if I'm going to spend the money, and I advise anybody, if you're going to spend the money, buy real good stuff rather than spend money and buy several things that are in fair condition. Save the money and get something that's really good if you have your eye on it.
Now, let's talk about the item I purchased from you when we met at Philadelphia's Black Showcase event. Do you remember what I purchased from you?
I think there was a slave document.
Okay. It was about a fugitive slave being captured?
Yeah. That was a document that I believe there was a sheriff that had been hired to, and received money for going out to capture a fugitive slave.
A sheriff.
The piece. It was a sheriff. That's correct.
Not a marshal.
No, it was a sheriff.
Okay. Can you give us a little background of how that worked back in the day?
Beg your pardon?
Can you give us a little history as far as explaining how the system worked if a slave master wanted to capture a runaway?
Okay. Well, usually most towns had sheriffs or deputies, and if a runaway... A slave had taken off. Then the sheriff of the town would be authorized to go find that slave. And in the course of that, he would record his time and his expenses. And once he returned the slave, he, in his office duty, would have to record all these expenses in a ledger, and he would be paid. Primarily by the owner. Now, there are also freelance people out there, bounty hunters, and later on in the Civil War period, I believe, there was what they called slave patrols. And they would just be men who were, you could call, duly authorized to go collect the slaves that may have run off the plantations.
And how much is a document like that, an authentic document?
It varies, but one of my missions when I really started to understand the significance of all the items I collected, but particularly the documents, my main mission was to try to buy them as reasonably as possible and to sell them as reasonably as possible. Generally, most of my documents are more reasonable than what you might find in some of the higher-end catalog auctions. But I would say it depends on the condition. Also depends on the period of time. If you find items that are during the Civil War period and they deal with slavery, runaway slaves, auctions, plantations, or anything like that, then those items tend to get a premium because there are a lot of Civil War collectors out there.
Okay.
So I would say a range would be in a real decent document, anywhere from just a generalized document, $150 on up.
All right.
For
who
example,
are
I just,
your customers? Basically,
beg your pardon?
What type of people are your customers? Or clients?
That has changed over the years, but for a number of years, I did the Black Memorabilia Show down in Silver Springs, Maryland. And many of my customers were what you might describe as middle-class African-Americans. But I had, over the years, specific clients who collected, like, toys and that, and they were primarily middle-class, upper-middle-class Caucasians who were into generalized collecting toys. So mainly middle-class, upper-middle-class people were buyers.
Any authors, writers, museum curators?
I've had some curators buy a few things from me and inquire about things. Some people have bought interesting items of interest to them if they were writing a particular book about it or putting a little exhibit together and they needed certain kinds of pieces. So, again, the buyers of these items are varied. I really tried a lot of times to get items that almost anybody can afford. A lot of times I'll buy masses of memorabilia. That doesn't happen very often, but when I do, I try to sell them reasonably at $5, $10, $15.
Wow.
Like, for example, I have what they call brass manilas, which I think a lot of people have seen, but these have been authenticated as having come off of a Dutch slaver, and these manilas were used to trade for slaves, and they would be melted down and used by Africans. And these were the very small ones, but some of them were mounted on marble stands. They make nice gifts. I have some that are enclosed in marble, and those go anywhere from $15 to $25, and I have some loose ones that I sell for $5. So I try to put it out there for people to buy. But what's interesting in some of the shows that I've done is I spend a great deal of time talking with potential customers about the memorabilia that I have and the historical artifacts I have, because a lot of people, like myself when I first started, just really have no idea of what's out there. There's just a wealth of advertising, there's a wealth of artifacts that when people see them, sometimes they don't even recognize what they are. So
Can you talk about the appreciation factor? As far as your items, do they appreciate?
Oh, yes. I tell you, with my toys, for example, I held on to them for several years, and I pretty much document what I pay for items, etc. And when I decided, for example, to purchase land upon which to build my house, I put a lot of these items into an auction. And sometimes I got 4 or 5 times the amount of money that I paid for things. Again, you know, when you put things in an auction, it's subject to who's ever there and what they're really wanting to buy.
Right.
Almost anything I have, I believe, will appreciate. Again, I try over time, because I started to understand more fully about the market and about the significance of these artifacts. Over time, I try to buy more and more rare types things. I'm not into the fine arts, quite frankly. I just never got into the fine black artist's work.
Now, explain to us how you accumulate or acquire your items.
Well, I'm always on the lookout. Sometimes I'll just go to yard sales and I'll find some things, not of significant historical documents, but I'll find, for example, some of the modern black dolls, sports figures and that. I found a Muhammad Ali doll at a yard sale. I found some Michael Jordan dolls, etc. So I'll stop at yard sales, I'll go to flea markets, and I go to the different shows that are around. I'll go to stamp shows. Any type of show that's out there, you're generally going to find something of black historical significance. One of the recent things I'm starting to explore is money.
I just have one quick question before you move on to the money. What are the demographics of the people attending these events, these shows that you go to, these auctions?
Well, primarily they're middle class Caucasians who attend most of these shows. Most of the vendors are middle class Caucasians who, again, some of them have made a living buying artifacts of all types. And some people are very similar to myself, where they're pretty much employed through a company or self-employed, and they do shows to get extra money.
Well,
but I think more importantly, it seems to me that there's a community that had developed among a lot of these people, because I go to the shows and a lot of the same vendors are there. They have a communication network where if I'm looking for something in particular, I could talk to a vendor, and very often that vendor will be able to point me in the right direction to somebody who may have that type of object.
Okay. Now, how are you received by the other vendors in this community as being a black vendor? Is there a ceiling?
It's kind of like anybody who's not within the group originally. When you're new to a group, there's a lot of hesitancy on people to communicate and befriend you. But as you begin to be consistent in your appearances and that, I find most people are very friendly. Most people are more willing to help. And very often, we're able to help each other. So it's just like any other type of community. There are some people who are more engaging than others.
Okay. Now, you were talking about the money.
Like I was saying, you know, as I continue to collect, I mean, there are just so many areas that I'm unaware of. More recently, I was made aware that there were four or five secretary treasurers, I believe, or treasurers of the United States, and they have their signatures on various denominations, one of which is Blanche Bruce, who was one of the first black senators after Reconstruction. He was also one of the first U.S. treasurers. Black treasurers, and so there's money out there, and that's a whole new ball game for me in terms of how those currencies are valued. For me, I'm just particularly interested in finding currency that was signed by the black treasurers.
That's awesome. That is phenomenal. So how did you learn about this money?
Well, one of the last shows, two shows ago down in Silver Spring, there was a gentleman who, an African-American gentleman who was doing an exhibit just on money that had an African-American connection. And so I started talking with him and finding out more about it, and then I went on the Internet and started researching and just learning about it. And that's what I would suggest to anyone, is do your research first, learn what it is you're getting into before you make any kind of major purchases.
How much would this money be if we found, what was the gentleman's name again?
Blanche Bruce. Okay.
If we find currency with his signature on it, how much is it worth? How much should we pay?
Well, it depends on the denomination and the condition.
Okay.
The higher denominations, like, you know, if you find things with $500, $100 and that, they're going to be in a good condition. They're going to be considerably more than if you found a $1 or $5 bill.
How much would a $1 bill cost?
Oh,
with his, with Blanche Bruce's name on it.
We go.
You don't have to be too accurate. Just a ballpark figure. I hear you doing the research.
Depending on, I got a book out here.
What's the name of your book for our audience?
Okay,
someone might
want
to purchase it.
United States Paper Money.
Okay. United States Paper Money.
Right.
That's what you're looking through right now. You're looking for.
Yeah, and that's all American currency. But there are certain periods of time where the treasurers were African Americans, and so you go to that year to find the signer.
Right.
And they'll list different denominations, and they'll grade them.
We should Google African American treasurers.
Yes, you can do that.
And then find out the years, and then find those specific years, the dollars that came out the mint
right.
for that year.
Yeah.
Well, that's an awesome story. Well, I'll post more information about what you're speaking about on the blog page.
Okay.
I've never heard that story before. And this gentleman you met, how long has he been collecting money signed by black?
Collecting about 20-some years, I believe.
Is he African-American as well?
He is, and I'm looking for his information so I could give it to you, but I will email.
Well, it's not a rush. This is your show. We'll talk about him later. Now, you gave me a few images that I posted on the blog show.
Yes.
Wentworth. Please tell everyone about Mr. Wentworth Chiswell.
Okay, Wentworth Chiswell was a key figure in New Market and New Hampshire politics. He was the son of a Hope Steele Chiswell, a well-known pre-Revolutionary War house builder. His father, Wentworth's father, was mulatto, and he was quite the businessman. His son, Wentworth Chiswell, who that document represents, was involved in a lot of local politics. He attended Dummer Academy. He was a justice of peace and a yeoman.
What is that?
A yeoman is... I guess a worker on the docks.
Okay.
Okay.
Were they free?
Pardon?
A quick question. Were they free in this colonial period?
He was free.
Was he free because he was mulatto, or was he free because he purchased his freedom?
Well.
Or was he an indenture?
He was already a free man. See. What a lot of people don't know is a lot of African Americans living up in the Northeast were considered free people. They were considered freemen. They had no slaves because a lot of those states up there weren't slaveholding states.
Right. They were religious states, right?
Yes, they were. And those states were at the forefront of the anti-slavery movement. So a lot of African Americans up there were freemen, what they call freemen, and they held different positions. Mr. Chiswell, for example, served as a town assessor, a selectman, and a coroner. He preserved the town records and helped start the first private library in his hometown of New Market, New Hampshire.
Is that a historically black town?
No, it's not.
Right. What is the name of the town again?
New Market.
Okay.
And see, he purportedly was the first black elected official in America.
Explain.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, go ahead.
And his elected position was that of a selectman. Now, these were people who basically governed and wrote rules and that and upheld the law in the towns. He debated during the 1820 Missouri Compromise and was pretty much seen as equals within his community in the town that he served.
Can you explain what the Missouri Compromise was, 1820 Missouri Compromise?
I'm afraid my history on that particular area is not that good, but I believe it has something to do with when they were looking at slaveholding states and buying the territory, which is the Missouri area, they held several debates on splitting that state into whether to slavehold or to have freedom.
Right. They were trying to retract the Constitution, which said that Northwest Territory stated that all new territories had to come in as a free state. Any new territory that the new country, you know, New America, is the young country, purchased would be free state.
Free state.
And the Missouri Compromise ignored the Constitution and decided that they would make this new state a slave state, going against the wishes of the framers. So I think that's awesome.
I'm glad you know your history.
Oh, no, a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome that your guy, Mr. Cheswell, Wentworth
yes.
Cheswell, was involved with that because
yes.
so many people look at it as being just a white issue that we weren't involved with.
There were several African Americans who were involved in the debates of the time. Just of note, one more note on Mr. Cheswell was that he made approximately the same midnight ride that Paul Revere made to warn his townsfolks that the British were coming. And it was almost to the day, I believe, that he made his ride. Of course, very few people know about that. There was, I was told, and I didn't get to see it, there was a PBS special that examined and looked at the life of Mr. Cheswell.
Well, excellent story. I hope our listeners are enjoying what they're hearing. And we're talking to Mr. Barry Anthony. And your professional title, Mr. Anthony, is?
I just don't have a special title.
I didn't know if I should call you a documentist. Or...
No, I'm not a doctor. I'm just a collector and kind of a historian, I guess you might call me.
Can you give out your contact information?
Yes. My cell phone number is area code 570-294-3044. And my residence number is 570-366-7742.
We were talking about colonial African Americans. Could you tell us anything about Crispus Attucks? Did you ever run into any documents?
Hard to find. I've been looking. And I don't have any artifacts about him at all. I only have an engraving of the Boston Massacre, which, of course, he was shot and killed during that massacre, along with several other blacks.
What is an engraving?
Well, it was a type of printing that they used in the early, in the 17th and 18th century. Some of them are block engravings, steel engravings. What it is a print on a sheet of paper.
Okay. And the value of the engraving versus other types of
print
media?
The engravings, depending on the size, et cetera, and who made the engravings, some of them could be quite valuable. But as a general rule, those are not as valuable as, say, a personal document or item of a particular person.
Okay. Well, we're only down to the last 10 minutes. Do you believe that?
No, I don't. Went by pretty quickly.
Because we're having a good time. You have another item that you sent me that I've posted on the blog, the Antique E-Show blog website. It is a military document. Could you explain that to our guests?
Is that the photo?
Yes.
Okay.
Not the one of the... I couldn't post the one with the shotgun.
Okay.
This is the one I'm talking about. They're all in uniforms posing together.
Okay. Yeah, that one is what they call the Grand Army of the Republic Reunion. After the Civil War, many of the soldiers who fought formed various posts in different towns, sort of like a VFW post, so to speak.
Right.
And they would have these reunions where the soldiers that were in that area who fought in the war would have a day to honor them with parades, et cetera, so on. What's really interesting about that photo is that there is an African-American who I've not been able to identify as yet, in the midst of all his white comrades holding the flag, which kind of signifies that he was perhaps put in that position because he had contributed perhaps significantly in the effort between the states.
It was an honor to hold the flag.
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
So I know that is, I believe, in Athens, from Athens, Pennsylvania, and I'm still researching to see if I can identify him. What's really kind of interesting is that over time, I found that up here in Pennsylvania and in various places that there were perhaps some black soldiers who were with the white troops and white regiments. I don't think there's a lot about that, but I have a couple items that I've been researching for a while to determine if this is the case.
I saw this picture on a PBS show. You ever watch the show History Detective?
No.
Well, they have a show in New Jersey called History Detective, and this picture was on that show. And they
is
talked
that
about,
right?
Yes. They talked about the gentleman with the flag. So I would go to the PBS website if I were you and look through the archives of the show, History Detective.
Okay.
And they talked about how this organization was integrated, and after Reconstruction, they segregated these organizations and just started a new one, as you said, like the VFW, made
right.
it illegal for them to be together, the blacks and white soldiers. So we don't hear a lot of the truth, and, you know, but go ahead and talk about how did you receive this item?
Well, again, it was one of these finds going to a flea market and looking through photographs and documents and things, and I found a photo.
You found this item at a flea market?
Yes.
Is it original? Or is it?
Yes, it is.
It's
original.
Wow. So how much do you think that would go for? How much are you willing to sell it for, put it that way?
I think something like that would probably go between $500 and $800, I believe. It, again, I think it's an unusual item, you know, a photograph of that nature, because I don't think you'll see very many photos where you have mixed company like that.
You're right. Wow, I'm just really taken back by the information that you've given us. You said you would sell it between $500 and $800.
Probably, if I sell it.
Would you sell copies of it, like to someone like myself? I don't need the original.
Yes, I would do something like that. You know, the Cheswell item that's up, I'd be willing to sell that item.
Copies, duplicates.
No. I have several Cheswell original documents, and if I have, you know, generally how I operate is if I can get two of something, I'll sell one.
Okay. Now, do you work with any of the historical black museums or research centers or libraries like the Schomburg in Harlem, New York?
No, I do not.
Have you ever visited?
Yeah, I've been to the Schomburg, yes.
Well, I think they would be very interested in having you speak and bringing your items here to display.
Over the course of time, I've done some exhibits at some colleges and schools and that. What I've been trying to put together as far as the exhibit goes is what I call African American First. That mm-hmm. would include African Americans who were the first to hold certain positions, for example, politically. I'm trying to get people from Revolutionary War period, Civil War period, and even, you know, modern day times. Also, I'm looking for African American newspapers, the first that were established in the colonies. Those are so difficult to find. But I'm on a search, and maybe I'll get lucky.
Okay. Let's go over the titles of the pictures that you gave me, posted on the website. So if someone wants to call you up, they'll be able to ask you.
Okay, the first one is just Wentworth Cheswell. That is a legal document, I believe, from 1811. It has
okay.
his signature on it. The photograph is just a what they call GAR photograph.
And if you could give us a snippet of who he is one more time.
Well, I guess I'll have to go to PBS History Detective to find out his name, but...
No, I'm talking about Wentworth.
Wentworth. He was reportedly the first black elected official in the United States.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the name of the organization, the military organization.
That's the Grand Army of the Republic, GAR.
Okay, and what? Tell us more about that organization.
Okay, that was Civil War veterans who lived in a community, and they would do annual celebrations regarding the ending of the Civil War, and they would have parades and get honors.
All right. And the third person you talked about was Mr. Blanche Bruce?
Yes. Okay, he was the first black senator elected after Reconstruction. And
you know what state?
Beg your pardon?
Which state?
I believe he was South Carolina.
Okay. And the significance of him, of our discussion in regards to Mr. Blanche Bruce?
Could you repeat that, please?
We were talking about Blanche Bruce because he was of his signature.
He was a, I believe, a secretary treasurer of the United States.
Okay.
And he signed, his name appears on currency during that period of time in which he held that position.
Right, so his signature is on the money during a Reconstruction period.
This would be directly after Reconstruction. Well, it would be during the Reconstruction after he finished serving as a senator, I believe.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for a very educational show. When I met, I knew that you were full of information. And last thing I want you to say before we say goodnight is your contact info one more time.
Okay, my name is Barry Anthony. My cell phone is 570-294-3044. And the other number home is 570-366-7742.
Thank you again, Mr. Anthony. I hope to have you back on.
It's quite enjoyable.
And we'll talk.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.